good for three times, and maybe you got a home run, Murphy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. With that ringing endorsement, if somebody would move the bill, we'll leave.
We're hearing Senate File 1369, and we've heard this bill before, so I don't think we need to go into the wonderful plans that are going on down in Senator Murphy's district for their long-term care programs. But we do need to just take a quick minute to look at the fiscal note. Which shows zeros with a negative number. Negative numbers and a zero general fund cost across all the years of the bienniums. Are there any questions about the fiscal note? So, Senator Murphy, we don't quite have a quorum yet, but when the time comes, Senator Lynch indicates she'll move your bill. We'll go separately then, and we'll be moving it to the Finance Committee.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Lynch.
Is there an amendment we need to do also here? Yes, there's an amendment we need to do. Senator Murphy, do you?
Yes, ma'am. Chair, I'm sorry. We do need that amendment on the bill. And I do have the A4 amendment.
Aren't we in pretty good shape?
So, Senator Murphy, do you mind if we do the amendment without you being here? We still don't have a quorum, so.
That'd be fine, Madam Chair.
All right. We'll just make sure we do the amendment, and then we'll send the bill as amended to the full Finance Committee.
Thank you.
We have a quorum now. So Senator Lynch moves the A4 amendment to Senator Murphy's bill, Senate File 1369. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And Senator Lynch would move that Senate File 1369 as amended be recommended to pass. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good luck with your project.
This is not in my district, too. Let's see what's in here.
All right, we'll move on to item number 2, Senate File 207, Senator Berglund, Cover All Kids.
Madam Chair and members of the division, this is a bill that I've been working on since last summer, and it keeps changing all the time because of the circumstances we have with what's going on in Washington, D.C. So we have everything we could think of in the bill to get more kids covered. And now we have too much in the bill. So we can afford probably to do the express lane eligibility, and that would qualify us for the federal SCHIP money, the enhanced money. But that provision has a Medicaid cost. And so in order to cover that Medicaid cost, we would have to cut something in our budget more deeply to cover that cost. The other alternative is we could do most of the other things that we had in the bill, waiving premiums and waiving the four-month waiting period for kids, et cetera, and not get the federal SCHIP dollars, just go with the regular Medicaid match that we would otherwise get. And so that is really what we need to decide, and I would like to have some feedback from you all as to what you recommend we do, because I don't want to make this decision by myself. I want the committee to help me make it. Since one involves getting additional SCHIP dollars from the federal government, and we would be covering more kids. But we have a Medicaid cost that we would have to cover by making some reductions, further reductions to cover that Medicaid cost than otherwise we would have to make. Or the other alternative is just to do some things in the Minnesota Care program to make it easier for kids to be enrolled in it and not get the additional federal money.
Senator Berglund, there's an A4 amendment. Is that somehow related to one either of the alternatives, or is that something different? Senator Berglund.
It is related to things that would need to be in the bill to get the federal money, the federal SCHIP money. And so since we've got it all in one bill right now and we're not going to take it apart right now, I would move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Senator Berglund's moved the A4 amendment. Any discussion on that? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? A4 amendment has been adopted. Senator Berglund has laid out two potential options for us. Senator Berglund, to begin with, can you give us an indication with option number one, which is the opportunity to capture those increased federal SCHIP dollars. When you talk about reductions that would need to be made elsewhere in order that we can come up with the Medicaid cost, how much of a reduction?
Well, I don't know where. Oh, David's over there.
Mr. Godfrey.
I believe that it would be the general fund number under costs. It's
done. Mr. Godfrey, the question was with regard to what I'll call term option one, where we would be able to utilize and capture those increased federal SCHIP dollars. Senator Berglund has indicated that with that option, we would need to make some cuts so that we could come up with the Medicaid cost. And so I was asking for some explanation of how much of a reduction are we, what kind of figure are we being asked to consider? Mr.
Madam
Godfrey.
Chair, members, if I could just have a moment to consult with the Ms. Kavanaugh,
yep.
That would be helpful.
Absolutely. I have another question. It's not such a fiscal question. And so my other question, Senator Berglund, would be with regard to option number two. You've indicated that you believe we could do that within the resources that we have, Senator Berglund. But it would be easier for children to enroll. Would it also be the case that additional children would be enrolled? And
oh, yes, there would be additional children enrolled. Problem is you have to pick out the pieces out of the fiscal note, but there would be additional children enrolled, but we, in order to qualify for the federal dollars, we have to, over the four-year period, be showing that we will enroll at least 30,000 more kids. We would not be enrolling that many with our other options. The express lane eligibility impacts Medicaid because it's enrolling kids through the schools regardless of whether they're eligible for Medicaid or Minnesota Care.
Looks like Mr. Godfrey's ready to address the committee. Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, I'm sorry for being a little late to this discussion. I assume the question is if the option that Senator Berglund laid out, which is to include the delayed verification and then the express lane eligibility proposal, what the general fund cost would be. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Godfrey.
Then I would just direct your attention to page 8 of the fiscal note. This summarizes the general fund costs for the delayed verification portion of this bill. And the cost to the general fund for this item is $268,000 in fiscal year 11. And then just over Madam Chair, members, I'm sorry if I misspoke. If I said this is the express lane cost, this is the delayed verification costs. And then you can see in the tails this item costs the general fund just under $1.6 million. The larger cost, however, is in Section 16, and you can start to see that discussion on page 11, and it's summarized on page 12 of the fiscal note. And the medical assistance costs are really totaled at the bottom of the first part of the spread, of the table here. The state share for fiscal year 11 would be $12.9 million, and then in the tails it is $78 million. So really, if you adopt both of those proposals, you're looking at a cost of just over $13 million in fiscal year 11, and then in the tails it's about $80 million. And Madam Chair and members, also to kind of follow up on your question, Madam Chair, the enrollment effect is approximately 30,000 in about 600 to 800 kids by fiscal year 13, which exceeds the requirement of 30,000 new enrollees to receive the enhanced SCHIP funds.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are those in enhanced SCHIP funds permanent, ongoing, or are they just one time?
Well, Senator Berglund.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, they're permanent.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I'm still just trying to make sure I understand. Are we looking for sure at an either or proposition here? And if we are, could the cost of the enhanced cost from the general fund, would the other proposals that we had, those were coming out of Minnesota Care funds, so that in other words,
there would be
one wouldn't offset the other. One would definitely be a cost to the general fund.
Senator
yes.
Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson. In either case, there would be some Minnesota Care costs, but we can cover those. The issue is, in order to do what we would need to do to get the new federal SCHIP dollars, we would have to incur general fund costs, and in order to cover those, we would have to make cuts in our budget to the tune of $13 and $80 million more than we otherwise would have had to. But we would have 30,000 more kids covered, and we would have more federal dollars to do it with.
Senator Berglund, repeat those two figures again. 13 million and?
80 million.
And 80 million. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund. And that's in addition to what the federal government would be paying extra. And I don't remember if you said, but how much was it we would be getting extra from the federal government?
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the preliminary amounts I've seen have been over $18 million. It's about $18.5 million a year. And that would be the full amount you would receive once you've met the 30,000 child threshold.
Is there any...
That would be on top of the regular Medicaid match,
which is 60-40, right, Senator?
Senator Sharon.
And what it, what, but the share, this, the mix between the federal and the state share is 60-40, is that right? Is that?
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, my understanding is that the enhanced match is really based on a calculation of how far you've exceeded the target that the federal government has set for the state. And so I'm not sure exactly if it's not based on a particular percentage breakdown.
Senator Berglund, if we would choose not to exercise this option one to utilize those federal dollars, do we lose that opportunity, or might that opportunity be able to present itself at a, you know, at a later time, or is that, should that be a factor in this decision? Senator Berglund.
Well, I can't imagine that they're just going to sit around with a pot of money waiting to see, you know, longer than 4 years whether a state is going to be applying for it. I mean, I can't imagine they would do that. I don't think the law itself has a time limit on it, but, I mean, the federal government has a budget deficit also, and so I wouldn't imagine they just sit around with money if states hadn't indicated that they were going to try and make a claim on it.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Well, I just think that with as hard as it was to get the SCHIP funds reauthorized, that we would be foolish to let them pass and to take full advantage of them. The question is, having not really seen the budget, it's really hard to know how you would add back in or where we would take funds from in order to match that.
Well, the $13 million isn't such a big problem, I would say, but the bigger problem is the $80 million, of course. But, if that is what you would like, we will figure it out.
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, I'd just like to make one correction to something I said earlier about the 30,000 new enrollee number. I've been informed, actually, that it's not the actual threshold that we get to 30,000, but it's that we get to basically 5 out of the 8 elements of our program are, we have 5 out of the 8 elements that the federal government is looking for in each state program in order to receive the enhanced FMAP or enhanced CHIPRA money. Therefore, however, the least expensive way for Minnesota to do that would be to do the delayed verification and the express lane, and that would result in 30,000 new kids or 30,800 new kids. And the enhanced match on that amount would be $18.5 million. So that's just a clarification.
I guess that's me. I have a question. I am wondering, I'm appreciative of the comment that Senator Prentner Solon made, and I can only imagine that the chair must feel like this every day when you're trying to put together this bill. It's not as if all of the information is neatly aligned on pages in front of us. So if I were looking to figure out how to resolve this $80 million problem, can we do that without impacting eligibility in some other area? Is that possible? Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, yes. We wouldn't be cutting eligibility for one group in order to get an eligibility for another group. I won't do that.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, again, just kind of following back on what Senator Prentner Solon said, I agree with the philosophy that we should try to take advantage of as much as we can in federal dollars, especially if they may not be there again. I guess I'm just concerned about not knowing. I mean, would these be cuts from nursing homes? Would these be cuts from hospitals? Where would the cuts come from? Or is there anything that... I mean, because I know that you don't have $80 million just sitting around.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I can't answer that question for you. I suppose you could tell me that is what your goal is, and then when you see it, if you don't like it, I suppose we could change your mind. I mean, that's about the best I can do here. I mean, I just felt like this was an important enough decision that you should have a chance to tell me what you think we should be trying to do.
Senator Sharon.
I'll just add my voice that I think covering all kids has been a goal for many of us for a long time, and that this is another giant step for us to move towards achieving that goal. So if there's any way we can possibly do that without gutting the living daylights out of other obligations that we think we need to be considerate of, I'd like to see that happen. But it's very difficult to say that without that in the back of my mind, that I don't know I don't really know the implications of the reorganization that has to occur in our budget in order to make this happen.
I understand that.
I think weigh in, please. But I think what I'm hearing is that there is a desire to increase eligibility, and there is a desire to put us in the best position possible that we can capture and utilize any federal dollars that are available to us. And at the same time, I think that members of the division are saying to the chair, yes, in concept, we think this is a direction that we should entertain and move forward with. We're a little nervous to be overly robust in our request because we don't know exactly what the impact is. But I don't know how we get there unless we go forth and try to pull that together. Comments from members?
Well, I think I've gotten your sense of it, so we'll just lay this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Sure. We'll move on to...
Someone who would like to...
Hello, my name is Maureen O'Connell, and I'm with Legal Aid, and we have been working on the CHIPRA legislation in some detail, and also with Carol Spector from the Children's Defense Fund, and we want the committee to understand that. Committee members to understand that there are different ways to do simplification. And the federal government has laid out these 8 different ways of doing simplification. And that's what they're willing to pay for. And that's where we could get the enhanced bonus if we get if we enact five out of these eight. But another way to do simplification that might make more sense for our programs and where they're at right now and how they're constructed is what is in Senate File 207 and what we have come to know as the barrier reduction provisions. And, you know, unfortunately, I think those, one could argue those might make the most sense, those simplification elements that are in Senate File 207 that, unfortunately, the federal government might not pass the enhanced match for. So I just wanted, I don't know if I've made sense, but the barrier reduction pieces in the and getting rid of the premiums, you know, are things that we identified as a state that, and that we're in, that Senator Berglund's been working on since the summer, and Representative Thiessen in the House, as the true barriers that, you know, as important barriers that we need to get rid of, and important parts, important ways of simplifying our programs. You know, and then unfortunately, then the federal government came along with CHIPRA later, and those simplification proposals are all great and are all, you know, make a lot of sense, and in an ideal world, we would maybe like to go, we would like to go that route. But it might be in this case that we just can't afford it. But from legal aid's perspective, we just want to let the committee know that we also think that the pieces that you would be possibly able to enact out of, and that the barrier reduction, the premiums, the 50% ESI, and that have more of a direct impact just on the healthcare access fund and would not require more general fund cutting, that those are really important pieces.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connell. Any questions? Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, so Ms. O'Connell, are you saying, I'm not sure if you're saying that the information we received about the fiscal impact is different?
No.
Ms. O'Connell.
No, I'm just saying that there are different ways to do program simplification. And I think that's what Senator Berglund was getting at through her bill, Senate File 207, where she, you know, reduces, takes away premiums up to 200%. And we think that those are very important simplification elements that, unfortunately, you know, don't qualify us for, by doing those, they don't qualify us for CHIPRA money, but they would be very good things to do. And we might, again, be in a situation where we might not be able to afford the CHIPRA. The cost of doing the CHIPRA pieces, because so they are very prospective. I mean,
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
So, Connell, I'm still not clear. Are you using SCHIP funds and CHIPRA interchangeably?
Yes. Well, sorry.
Ms. O'Connell.
It's become known as CHIPRA, but it is SCHIP.
Okay, so you're saying we really don't have to do all of this in order to qualify for the CHIP funds?
No, I think that the committee is kind of, what I heard the committee kind of struggling with.
I think we've had enough. I mean, it's either or deal.
Right.
If we do one, it's not like it's a bad thing to do. If we do the other, it's a good thing also, and we get the federal money. And I think that's clear.
There are two options that Senator Berglund laid out to us tonight. And
where
we're
at. Chair?
Senator Prettner-Solon.
All we heard was the one option. We don't know what the other option was.
Senator Prentner Sloan, we did hear about two options, and maybe we can quickly summarize those, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, the other option is simply reducing barriers for kids to enroll in Minnesota Care.
And Senator Prentner Sloan.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, like, what would be some examples of those reductions in barriers?
Everybody except
Senator Berglund.
Everybody except Senator Olson heard this in the policy committee, so I wasn't going to go over it all, but
Senator Sharon.
We are taking for kids that are at 200% of poverty or less, we're removing premiums, we're removing the 4-month delay, we're removing the EIS barrier, and I think there's one other thing we're doing.
50%. So if I could, and Senator Berglund, if I'm mischaracterizing this, please correct me, but one alternative is to simply focus on those things that are deemed to make enrollment easier that wouldn't require additional general fund expenditures. That's one option before us. Another option before us is to position us so that we can maximize these new federal dollars that are available. In doing so, we have the capacity to be able to increase eligibility for children in Minnesota. There is a cost associated to doing that, and part of that decision is whether or not we are willing to make those adjustments to come up with the necessary match dollars that we'll need. And we're talking about $13 million initially and then $80 million. So those are the two options that were presented tonight. Senator Prentner Sloan.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, we do not, though, impact the same number of children under both proposals. And we can impact 30,000 children if we employ both options. Is that correct?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Prentner Sloan, yes, because we the things that we would do under the express lane eligibility also impact kids who are eligible for Medicaid. We get more kids.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund. Is there any possibility of doing the things that is there any possibility of a waiver based on showing what we're doing that's not an option?
I doubt it.
Senator Berglund.
I doubt it. I mean, the criteria that the federal government has laid out is criteria that's available to all the states, and it isn't like we couldn't meet it if we choose to.
It's kind of like one of these pivotal moments where we just sort of have to decide which direction we want to go. Senator Prentner Sloan.
I'm sorry. I'm still trying to understand. It's just blowing my mind that it's costing so much to do what appears to be outreach and eligibility determination rather than actually covering the children.
No,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Prentner Sloan, we pay for covering the kids, too.
Yeah.
We get them in through the express lane eligibility through the schools, and we cover them both.
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, just to kind of summarize, or if you want to see a summary of the option two, I guess it would be the Minnesota Care kind of only approach. You can find that on page 10, and it summarizes the enrollment effect of the different provisions of that option, the no premiums, automatic renewals, the barriers, so on. And on page 11, it shows that about just less than 22,000 kids would be enrolled under that option two. And the costs to the healthcare access fund are also summarized there right below there on page 11. It's like $4 million in the first biennium and then about $73 million in the second biennium.
Mr. Godfrey, point us to what line.
Madam Chair, members, if you're on page 10 of the fiscal note, and then under the heading that's titled Sections 7 through 10, 13, and 14, that includes the analysis of what's been described as Option 2. It includes, then, you can see the first table, it starts out total added enrollment, and it points out the effect on no premiums, then the effect of automatic renewal, insurance barriers, and then an interaction effect on the next page. And then just below there, you'll see the last line of that table has the state share, and that's the state share of the healthcare access fund cost that would be under, I mean, which would be undertaken in order to pay for this option.
Thank you. That was helpful. Senator Prettner-Solon.
And Madam Chair, is this then, Mr. Godfrey, just bringing children, covering children up to 200% of the federal poverty level?
Ms. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, it's and Senator Prettner-Solon, it's removing more barriers for kids at or below 200% of poverty, because that's where we have the most kids that are uninsured but are eligible. So we're removing barriers for those kids to make it easier for them to get into the program. We also have a provision in the bill that allows people who are over the 275% of poverty to buy in at full cost for their kids to Minnesota Care, but it doesn't have a very big enrollment effect.
Senator Sharon.
Could you tell me if there are some of these, in Senate file number 207, there are a number of adjustments that are made, including, you know, I'm noticing the self-employed farmers deal is included in this.
Yes, but we did,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, we did hear that as a separate bill, so I wasn't going into that tonight. It was in this bill also.
But yeah, it's just a variety of ways that if we do the option one rather than this, if by not doing these things, what are we giving
well,
up
it doesn't,
other than other
well,
than
we don't
other
need
than
to
number.
Give up the farmer option in order to do option one. I mean, that's sort of something that stands on its own. It's a Minnesota Care cost, but it doesn't have anything to do with the Insure All Kids piece.
It just popped out at me, Senator, because of course I have an interest in that. But I'm wondering if there are others here that would have in this list of reduction of barriers. If we don't reduce these, does this create other kinds of problems that I can't see just by reading through a list?
Well, Madam
Senator
Chair
Berger.
And Senator Sharon, it'd be nice to do them all, but I don't think we can. So,
and I agree
Olson.
With that. I'm trying to understand what it is the implications are of each of these, so that when I vote or when I express my opinion, I feel like it's a little more informed. And I also am not in the policy committee.
I appreciate you. You know, I think we all are feeling a little bit. At a little bit of a disadvantage here, but I think what Senator Berglund is asking us to do is to try to give her some guidance on maybe which option we should spend a little bit of time and energy pursuing. And I know whether it's one or two that presumably you'll work on that and you'll come back and we'll have a more thorough discussion, because we'll have before us where that $30 million is coming from and where that $13 million is coming from. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Berglund, assuming we're not borrowing from the Health Care Access Fund to pay for non-health care access costs,
no,
which
wouldn't.
I don't think any of us would support, is the difference here that we're looking at how long the fund stays, I guess you could say, viable? And could you remind us how far out in the future it is before it's projected that the healthcare access funds might need some or run into an issue with their fiscal viability? And is that the issue as we enhance the benefits under this program? I mean, is that something for us to have in mind, or isn't that a concern?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, yes, that is a concern. And we have some money in the Health Care Access Fund to do some things, but we don't have enough money to do everything in this bill. I mean, we can't do both options.
So, Senator Olson.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I know that this has been stated in this committee in the past, but at what point, assuming we go along the way things are right now with the benefits the way they are, how far does what's in the fund projected to last without any adjustments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Olson, that's a very hard question to answer right now, because a lot of the things that we're doing to save money in the Health Care Access Fund also. So I don't think we exactly can answer that question today for you, but I can answer the question that we don't have enough money to do both options.
Can you answer this question, Senator Berglund? Has the committee given you enough information this evening on
this? I think so.
This?
I haven't heard anybody change their mind about this. So we'll set this aside and we'll see where we can go with it.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, the only thing that Senator Sharon and I are struggling with is that we've identified that 22,000 children will be covered by option two. And so this provision covers 8,000 children. That's at about $40,000 a year. That's our state costs. A match, I imagine, of the SCHIP funds.
Well, we get over
Senator
30
Berglund.
With the other option.
Right.
Right, that's what we're saying.
Total. But we get 22,000 by the one option. So this only gives us an additional 8,000. And it sounds like it's costing us about $10,000 per child to cover them on an annual basis. It just doesn't, I don't understand. And I want to maximize the SCHIP funds. I just don't understand how this can match. I mean, your fiscal note can meet that.
Senator Berglund.
Well, maybe Mr. Godfrey can help us with this, but with the other option, we're covering the cost of the new process, and we're covering the cost of covering more kids. We're doing both.
And there's no other way, Madam Chair or Senator Berglund, to get those additional 8,000 children covered at a reduced cost other than through this process?
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Berglund.
Senator Prentner-Solon, the only way would be to do some more things in the Medicaid program to make it easier for kids to enroll in the Medicaid program. And we haven't gone down that road because we didn't have the general fund money to do it. Now we're looking at it because of the additional federal funds that we might be able to get, or that we would be able to get, and, you know, needing to make a decision about whether we want to try and get that money or not.
Well, Senator Prentner-Solon.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I want to lend my support to this, but could we view it as a work in progress?
Everything is. Definitely everything is. But I just wanted to share with you what the decision is that we need to make and get some advice from you about what you'd like me to try and do.
Okay. All right. Let's continue. If we could move on to Senate File 1343, Senator Berglund. And there's an A8 amendment that is being distributed.
Yes. I don't think I have the right folder.
This is
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill started out as an idea to try to reduce ambulance costs by doing a pilot project in Hennepin County to transport people other than ambulance when it was not an emergency. And in trying to talk to the department about getting a fiscal note for this, they couldn't understand how it would save any money because they already have in their rates that if it's a non-emergency call, that the rate is supposed to be only $200. So they went back and looked because I said, well, apparently there's a lot of non-emergency rides that are getting paid as emergency rides. So they went back and looked at it, and indeed there are. And so I have the A8 amendment, which is a delete everything amendment, which would simply tighten up the rules about those payments so that, in fact, when people are making non-emergency trips, that they are billing us properly. And so that's what the A8 amendment would do, and then we have a worksheet on the savings.
Senator Berglund has moved the A8 amendment. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Senator Olson, I can't tell if you're questioning.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, I'm not sure if is the amendment called the bill? Is it like a I'm not sure what it's.
Senator Berglund.
It's a delete everything amendment.
Okay. Well, then.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I just have a question about how this works now and then how this might change things as far as reimbursement. I mean, is what determines whether something is an emergency or not, is that based on what ends up happening to the patient when they get, like, say, to the emergency room, if it turned out to be
no.
a genuine emergency or not? Or
Ma'am
Senator Berglund.
Senator Lynch, it is based on the ambulance assessment of the situation when they get to the call. So if it's diaper rash, that's not an emergency. You know, if it's an earache, it's not an emergency. If they get there and it's a car accident, it's an emergency. If they get there and somebody's having cardiac arrest, it's an emergency.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm just thinking, like, let's just say, for example, someone calls and says, I'm having chest pain, can you come right away? And the ambulance gets there, and it turns out that it wasn't a heart attack the person thought they were having. It was maybe severe indigestion or something like that. Maybe that will make a difference in then what the ambulance has to do in dealing with it so that they would have less expense. But if someone calls and said, I have a baby who has diaper rash, will you come? Why would an ambulance go on that ride? I mean, do they have to go?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson.
Senator Berglund.
Yes, the law requires if an ambulance is called, then an ambulance must go. And then the assessment is made by the paramedics in the ambulance when they get there as to what the medical condition is that's presenting. And then they do bring the person in, but if it's not an emergency, under the definition that's used in our statutes, then it's not supposed to be paid at an emergency rate.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Senator Berglund. Is that federal law or is that Minnesota law that says that if someone comes and indicates, calls an ambulance for what's clearly not an emergency, that the ambulance has to go?
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I'm not sure, but there clearly is liability involved if you, I mean, there would be liability involved if you didn't go when someone called. I mean, that was a concern about the pilot project, and that's one of the reasons we were doing the pilot project in Hennepin County, because there was a little bit more protection from liability. in those cases where they would be making, would have been making a judgment that it wasn't an emergency.
We have captured some savings here, so that's a
yes,
a step in the right, seemingly in the right direction. Is there, it looks like there might be someone that is just eager to step forward. I will just remind you that this is the finance division, so if you could limit your comments to the financial implications.
Absolutely, Madam Chair and committee members. Buck McAlpin, President, Minnesota Ambulance Association. Looking at this from a financial standpoint, we would have a couple concerns over the definition of emergency. As Senator Berglund alluded to, correct, in Minnesota state law, when 911's called, we respond regardless of toothache, diaper rash, or a cardiac arrest or a shooting. A toothache to us or to you, which may seem routine, is somebody having a myocardial infarction. We can't make those decisions. We did talk to Senator Berglund early of ideas of how to capture savings and develop a project with some tort caps, which is what 1343 was intended to. In Minnesota or through the country, Medicare is the primary payer for a lot of these patients, and Medicaid pays secondly on a crossover. With the medical assistance trade-out patients, in statute, Medicare, or medical assistance pays us up to the Medicare rate national, which roughly for a 911 advanced life support call is about $450-ish. The way this would be set up, I'm not sure if this changes the interpretation, and I have not seen the fiscal note, Madam Chair and members. This would most likely gut the financial resources of Minnesota's EMS.
There are.
It isn't that big of a savings. I don't think it could cut anything. But.
Madam Chair, and we would be interested to see what they're deciding as a non-emergency run.
Well, I'm sure that there'll be opportunities to continue this discussion. We are going to ultimately tonight we'll just be setting this aside. Is there any further discussion on the A8 amendment from members? Senator Olson.
Well, I would just say, Madam Chair, that if there's any way that we can go in the direction, and I can think of an example that I heard from a doctor in an emergency room where a patient said that because they could get their medication from the emergency room and they otherwise would have to go purchase it and pay a deductible, that they would just continue to keep calling the ambulance to come and bring them to the emergency room to get refills of their prescription. And, you know, I understand the liability concern, but somehow the extent we can put some restrictions in law for people to use common sense in when an ambulance should be used or not, that seems to me a better way to go than to require an ambulance company to take a loss for something they have no control over.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I really thought the pilot project was a good idea. I mean, part of the idea of it was not just to take people to an emergency room, but to take them to a clinic, if that would be more appropriate. But I wasn't going to get any savings on it. I mean, the department just couldn't see how they could justify much of any savings. And when they went back and looked at this, they said, yes, we see we are, most of the rides are being billed as emergency rides, and so we think there'd be some savings by tightening up this language. So that's, you know, I'm happy to keep working on the other idea another time when we aren't so desperate for savings.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund, and my sympathies to you, and thank you for your leadership in trying to get us through this horrific maze of fiscal challenges.
But I might just add one thing.
Senator Berglund.
My apologies to people from the Ambulance Association. We just got this about half an hour before our meeting started, so I didn't have the fiscal note information any sooner than you did, really.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you. And I just want to make note of the fact that as we're trying to find our way to our target, we wind up doing what we complain about in other divisions, and that is that it's off the state's plate now. It's off of the state's financial or columns here and our numbers, and we take care of it, but we're just pushing the cost or the problem into a different sector. And
well, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Berglund.
And Senator Erickson-Ropes, the way I look at this is it's just making sure that we're paying what we're supposed to be paying. It really isn't cutting anything. It's just making sure we do a little better job of making sure that what we're supposed to be doing is happening.
Okay. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund, thank you very much, and I appreciate that. And I think as we make these financial decisions that will save the state money, and rightly so, that we have to also acknowledge there may be some policy decisions that are going to have to follow this in another area to make sure that the ambulance folks aren't stuck with a whole bunch of bills that they're required to make runs on and then not get paid for.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, this isn't huge. I mean, these are not huge numbers. They help. But
it's,
you know,
I couldn't help but notice it's not $80
million. No, it's not.
Members, to the A8 amendment, any further discussion? Okay. Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A8 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund, I...
And then I just set this aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
There's no further work before the committee this evening before...
Senator Croy,
I'm sorry. Did I miss the amendment? Oh, I was having so much fun. There isn't an amendment. That is a number to be determined.
Madam Chair, I think maybe Senator Coring had a question about this ambulance bill. Did you?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were...
He would elbow me, I think.
Raising your hand there. All right.
All right. The amendment discussion is on the KC0012 amendment. Members, it's entitled Hospital Outpatient Reimbursement, if that helps. KC0012. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the division, this idea for savings is one where right now there is a pretty strong financial incentive anytime somebody goes to the emergency room to do a complete workup and run all the tests and everything all over again. And we have some people that, even with all of our best efforts, are visiting emergency rooms more than just once in a while. And so what this language would do is to treat those repeat visits like urgent care visits and to pay the emergency room at an urgent care rate and to encourage them not to keep doing workups on the patients over and over again. And that's what this would do.
Senator Berglund, does this amendment have one of those worksheets?
No. No, it doesn't.
All right.
So,
Senator Prettner-Solon.
So, are we to adopt this amendment to this past bill? Does that? So,
this is a different. This is a different idea.
This is item number 5 on the agenda.
Yes.
The emergency room rate. It's KC0012.
No, I know, but this bill has been before us before.
This would just be an amendment to the omnibus bill.
It's the one in your left hand there.
That's why I was wondering if they went.
Okay. Oh, you know, okay. Maybe I can clarify here because I'm not sure if you were with us the last time we sort of went through this routine and what we have seen is a series of amendments that have come forward on the agenda as amendments for discussion, which is a little unconventional, admittedly, but we're sort of working and kind of trying to pull this bill together with the best information that we have at given moments in time. And so this is just an opportunity to present this idea as this amendment for discussion, and it will be not voted on this tonight, but will be rather just be set aside for possible inclusion. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, I like this idea because I think anyone that works in healthcare knows that there are frequent flyers, and sometimes those visits to the ER are justified and sometimes not. I'm looking at the underlined section 2.8 to 2.13, and I do have some concern, though. It sounds like this language is talking about if they've been to the ER within the last year. I think we need to talk a little bit more specifically about if it's for another diagnosis or if it's for the same diagnosis, and then maybe 1 year between visits is pretty long for some people who have some chronic conditions. So I just like a little bit more thought given to what the parameters are there, but I do think we really do need to get at the problem you're talking about here.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Erickson Ropes, the impression that I had from actually the safety net folks I talked to about this is that when they do a workup, they do a workup for everything. I mean, you come in with a cut on your finger, and they'll do a workup for everything. So, you know, I suppose maybe we need to have something added here that would say, you know, if they're coming back in for something that wasn't included in their original plan, that we would not pay an urgent care rate then. I mean, you know, maybe they came in for their, they had a cold, they came in. And then maybe 6 months later they are coming in because they're in a car accident. You know, we probably need to do something along those lines within this language. But, you know, if you came in for a cold and then the next month you're coming in because you're diabetes is out of control, they probably, they did all of that and came in for the cold.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I was going to say something really similar. I thought, you know, if somebody breaks their leg and ends up in the emergency room, we wouldn't want to pay them at a lesser rate than that what they would normally be paid simply because the person was there in the last year for something totally unrelated. But I also agree with the concept of putting a disincentive to do repeated workups and encouraging people to access records where they would be otherwise available.
And Senator Berglund, this is more in fitting with the concept or the direction of healthcare homes, and we're and trying to create some better direction so that we're not utilizing the emergency room as the primary care facility or as the, you know,
we'd like
path
to
of
do
least
that.
Resistance.
We'd like to do that, but we know even with all of our best efforts during the next several years, we're still going to have some people maybe using the emergency room inappropriately.
Now, in fairness to the hospital association, just as the emergency medical people had a few minutes to visit with us tonight, I can't help but notice that the hospital association is looking for an opportunity to visit. So, Ms. Krinke, if you would just keep your comments focused to the fiscal implications before us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. During the 2005 legislative session, there was a change that was made during one of our previous state budget shortfalls, not as bad as this one, in which hospitals received a payment cut for inappropriate or what was deemed as inappropriate use of the emergency room, where we would receive an urgent care rate if indeed it was somebody who was coming in for sniffles or sore throat or something that was deemed to be a non-emergency service. And that cut took place during 2005. So already in place right now, if someone comes in and it is deemed to be an inappropriate emergency room use, we receive the urgent care rate for our reimbursement and not the emergency room rate. So I'm afraid this savings has already been booked a few years ago. So, I mean, it's worth, I mean, not knowing the details exactly of the care plan and how we're trying to move to healthcare homes, but we don't know exactly how this cost savings is going to work on this. And also from a hospital's perspective, some of that workup that has been referred to now, there's no guarantee that the individual goes to the same hospital. There's no guarantee that that they know that coming in. The hospital's required under EMTALA to see if that person does indeed have an emergency medical condition. And what may appear as not too serious, it could be a stomach ache. In reality, it could be appendicitis. And so you never know until you start doing some of those tests. So I just would a warning of caution on this, and we'll continue to look at it. So,
thank you. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, it does say that the emergency room has to have access to the patient care plan. So if they were going to another hospital that didn't have access to the plan, then this language wouldn't apply. So I think we've got that part covered.
Any further discussion from members on this? Okay.
So we'll do a
Senator
little more
Brevin.
Work on this and set it aside and see if we get something back.
Now, I think that completes the work before us tonight. But before we adjourn, I just want to say that while I know that as members we share some continued frustration and continued challenge as we are trying to work to pull this bill together, but I can only imagine the feelings that our staff must be experiencing right along with us, as well as the chair. So, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to announce that our 8:30 meeting tomorrow morning is not going to take place.
Okay. No meeting tomorrow morning, and watch your emails, and Ms. Anderson will keep us apprised. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.
So this 3% thing, I want to come up.